Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Miami, so you don't now, think Justin, how are you? Guy.
We've been wanting to get Justin.
We'll get our own podcast another time.
No, you can could take the steering wheel. Take the steering wheel, and you can go that way. No one ever talks to Justin. Nobody likes him really. I don't know what it is. So
actually, he's. You want to know something funny? He's the most loved host on my podcast. He's seriously.
He's the favorite.
No, because they just keep waiting, you know, for the opportunity. And so sometimes it comes.
Remember that thing that stick you brought it last time I was in California? How's that?
Yes, it's not going well.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
No, so. This has been a big learning process for me too. So I was actually going to ask you because what you had just mentioned as far as like starting something and then finishing something, mm-hmm. right?
Blessing and a curse, right? You start something and you're like, I probably should just get the fuck out of here, but I'm attached to this.
So I'm spinning this question right back onto you because when do you know when to abandon a project?
I don't know the answer to that.
I struggle with the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, dude, sometimes you just got to know when to, you know, sever
it. Know when to fold them. Right.
But, but I don't know. Listen, man, I guess the best advice is ask some people who you respect and say, mm-hmm. man, who you know won't bullshit you and say, hey, man, is this good or is this shit?
Right.
Because if it's good, then you got to pursue it. Because if it's from an altruistic place of like the world needs this because it's going to be a better place.
Yeah.
You got to do it, man. And if it's like people go, man, it's you've done better or you could do better. Then mm-hmm. fucking walk away, right?
Yeah. And that's how I feel that, and I've gone through that process of it being something that would definitely benefit people from a rehabilitation perspective, from performance, from all these different avenues. But it's something that, and I was challenged. I know like some of the guys, and I ask Adam, I ask Sal this constantly because I totally trust them as other business, mentors of mine on a lot of levels. So, going through that process, it was tough, man. It's tough because you see the vision of it, you see what it could potentially do. And, mm-hmm. But then you see the monstrous side of that business being way bigger and more moving parts than I feel like deserves the energy, the attention, the time that it will take to really foster and develop. So
there's a lot of beauty there, man. Because like, you know, everything I tell people when you're starting a business, when you're starting any endeavor, is it's going to take 10 times as much as you think. Whatever you plan for, 10x it, because it's so much more than you think. And, you know, speaking to, you know, the when to quit thing. So I had $321,000 embezzled from my business.
Holy shit.
Oh, shit. That's a lot of money embezzled.
Mm-hmm. And I walked away because it was the type of thing where it was going to cost me at least that much to get it back. And it sounds fucking dumb. And maybe it is. But it was like the stress and the time.
You're right. It costs you more than that, right?
Yeah. And would I have made double back? I don't know. Rather than going after someone, like, so your first response is, I'm going to fucking murder somebody. Mm-hmm. And then you get over the irrationality of that and go, well, that wouldn't get me anywhere. So then you go, what am I going to do? I'm going to sue somebody. Like, who am I going to sue? Mm-hmm. You try to go after the bank.
Is that worth your energy?
Yeah, yeah. So you got to decide, man, like, how much more are you going to have to put into it? How much more time and more money? And, mm-hmm. you know, and I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, and this may, you can answer this in any way. How do you continue to have a great relationship amongst the three of you guys when you spend so much time together?
That's probably one of the most common things we get asked.
Yeah, we get asked a lot.
Easy,
sure.
easy answer. We take baths together regularly.
Circle jerk.
No. Just a bath. We don't touch. We don't touch each other.
Yeah.
You know.
I handle myself.
Do you guys get along?
Very well.
Yeah. We fight a lot.
It's interesting.
Yeah, we do. It's dynamic.
Yeah. We're 100% without a doubt. We are family for sure.
How do you keep the finances out of it? Because
money is not the major motivator for us.
Yeah.
We are all. So
now, this, now give me the real answer. Do you want it?
No, no, really. I'm a very money motivated person for sure. I am. But we are all 37, 38, 39 years old. So where we're at in our life now, we all imagine meeting
two or three other buddies where you're at in your journey right now, deciding to go on a venture together. There's a lot that's happened with the four of us before we all got together.
It's actually quite serendipitous.
It is. It's very serendipitous. And there's no way Mind Pump would exist had we all met at 25. Stuff that we need to go through.
There's a lot of maturity that we've had to, you know, come to be able to like handle each one of our own like egos, personalities. Like we just don't really have that ego clash.
And everybody pulls their weight equally.
Yeah.
Equally, but differently.
Right. It's different.
It's funny. It took me a long time to learn this. When I used to argue and debate with people, my goal was to win. And I was very good at it. And this is why it was so hard for me to learn this particular lesson, is I'm going to win this argument. But sometimes, or not most of the time, actually.
Have you met my wife yet? Seriously.
No, I haven't.
She's also Sicilian. You guys have something.
Is she really? Yeah. Oh, you married a Sicilian, huh?
Fucking crazy.
God bless you. God bless you. But, you know, you must have some, I bet your kids are probably tough ones, huh?
My daughter, yeah. She's special.
Oh, Sicilian daughter. Could have fun with that one. So, here's the thing. No, all joking aside, we get in debates and arguments quite a bit, but nobody's doing it because they're trying to win.
Sure.
We want the right answer.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful, right? Because
listen, let me tell you something.
That's hard.
Oh, well, you know, especially when you have, you know, four alpha men who are, I mean, because we are for all intents and purposes on our own with other people, we're all alpha. We're all very confident. So you got four of us together.
Yeah.
And we all share this. There's a couple things that we share that are crucial because we're also very different. But there's a couple things that we share that are like, you know, people are interesting in that you need to have this basic foundational belief system, this basic scaffolding that you follow. And humans need that. We really do. And if for anybody who debates that, you can look at how bad people can behave when their scaffolding or their basic belief system is flawed. The 20th century is full of horrible, horrible acts that people did because their basic understanding was flawed. And our basic understanding, or at least our basic scaffolding, there's two things that we have in common, one of which is integrity. This is something that first day we all met, we sat down, that was the first thing I identified. Like these motherfuckers integrity to them is number one, just like it is with me, to the point where it could be at a fault. Well, we're going to be very brutally honest, even if that means we're going to hurt people's feelings or whatever, and we're going to be true to ourselves. That's the other half of integrity. It's not just telling people about themselves. It's about trying to be as honest as possible. So on the other end of that is humility. So if I'm having an argument with Adam, for example, which oftentimes that happens, me and him tend to butt heads on a lot of different things, and we'll argue about something, and sometimes it requires a little humility for me to be like, all right, that motherfucker's right. Like he's right. I'm going to have to follow on this particular topic. And I know the same things happen to him. It's happened to all of us. And those are the two things that I think really allow us to work together. Cause if we didn't have those two things, it'd be very difficult.
Well, and it's also the growth mindedness. So like, you know, each one of us, I think like Sal's mentioning, he's okay with being challenged and, you know, getting into this argument and realizing, you know, he may be wrong, you know, from that perspective.
Which is rare, by the way.
We all share that, though. Yeah. Whatever, dude. Yeah. But I mean, we all share that. We want to get better. You know, we want to get better in whatever it is that we're pursuing, whether it's a side of the business, whether it's, you know, communicating, you know, for me specifically, too. Like all these different things, I learn from them every day. And I feel like, you know, on some level, whatever we share and whatever we bring to the table with our unique characteristic, you know, we could all sort of pass that on and get better as a result and fill kind of like where we may be, you know.
I feel the podcast contributes a lot to it because each of you is probably put in your place very often with your guests because you're like, fuck, I don't know anything. Like you get a lot of brilliant people, right? Like how can you attach to your opinion when you got the expert sitting across the table from you telling you how it really is, right?
Totally.
I think that probably contributes to humility. Like I know for me, podcasting has contributed to my humility. My God, I know nothing. Like when you think you know something, you're like, oh, the more I learn, the more I learn, the less I know, right? Yeah.
You learn to embrace, here's what it is.
I know that I'm wise because I know that I know nothing.
There you go. Yeah. You have to make friends with what you don't know. Okay, so a lot of people make what they don't know an enemy. Like I have to know everything. If I don't know something, that's a terrible, like, again, like I have to win this argument or
pokes at insecurities.
Right.
pokes right, right at the insecurity when you don't know.
I mean, these are, my, honest to God, the most confident men I've ever met my entire life. Like, they're so confident in themselves that you know it when you're around people like that. You're a very confident individual. I can feel that when we talk. That's why we bonded. Like, you know, there's no competing, whatever. I have to behave a particular. We've met lots of people in this podcast space that are like that, where right away it's like, okay, this person's posturing because they obviously feel threatened by my energy. They're extremely confident individuals, and we all love what we don't know. What I mean by that is, when we're talking to a guest and they just said some shit that's the opposite of what I thought, we all thrive for that. I mean, you should see the conversations after we're done with the podcast, when a guest leaves and we're sitting there like, are you fucking kidding me?
My mind is blown.
And I love that, because right now I'm better off than I was 10 minutes ago when I thought I knew everything.
Right.
You know,
I wish I had that with my podcast. 'Cause like, I just finished with some guys and I'm like, God, I want to explore this for 4 hours deeper. Right. You know, they're long, they're gone. Like, no, let's talk for another 2 hours. Right. But you guys have that beauty of being able to discuss it and get, you know, get it all out.
Oh dude, I've had so many of them. I talk about this one a lot because it was such a mind blow. It's just such a silly, stupid thing, but it was so mind blowing to me. We had Paul Check on our show, who's this, he's just one of the most smart, one of the most brilliant men you'll ever meet. He's also out there. So when you talk to him, you got to really pay attention, because he can talk about so many different things. Super brilliant guy. Also incredible performance. 55-year-old guy who could do backstep lunges with over 300 pounds on his back. And he's just this incredible phenom. And we all ate dinner with him, and I'm watching him eat, and we serve him his plate. And then he puts his hands over his food like this, and he puts his head down, and he spends about 15 seconds with his eyes closed, and then he starts eating. And so I'm watching this and I'm thinking, like, I don't know Paul was religious. I thought he was, I didn't know he was belonged to a particular. So when we get on the podcast, I asked him about that. I said, were you praying? Like, are you Christian or what is that? And he goes, no. He goes, I was asking the food if it wanted to become a part of my body. I was asking my body if this is what it needed. I was asking my soul if this is what it wanted. And so I went through this whole process, basically going back and forth, asking different parts of him if this is what he, you know, is this the right thing? And at first I was like, well, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, and then I stopped for a second, because anytime I have that kind of a reaction now, I try to stop, although I don't always catch it. And I stopped for a second. And I said, hold on a second. Every culture, every major culture, or most cultures, cross-culturally, has some kind of a ritual before eating. Every major religion has some kind of, and it's called praying, right? Every religion does this, where you pray before you eat. Every major religion does this. Every practice in cultures and religions that never had contact with each other do this. And it's lasted for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
So there must be some kind of moral truth in this. And so I stopped for a second, and then I thought about modern context. And I think about the lady who's trying to lose weight or trying to get better health or whatever. And I think about her grabbing the Pop-Tart. And I think, if she took 10 seconds to ask her body if she's serving it,
just that simple. Yeah. Am I serving myself by doing
this? Just stop for a second. The likelihood that she would eat that Pop-Tart drops considerably.
I don't think so. Most people would just say, yeah, I don't really care. Because most people don't care about themselves that much.
Well, make the practice of it. Imagine if you made that a practice. What are you bringing? You're bringing awareness to eating.
Sure.
And it blew my mind right there. I was like, holy shit, that's why people pray.
People talk about, yeah, you're right.
That's why it exists.
We talk about mindful eating and, you know, getting back to the neurophysiology of it. Obviously, our autonomic nervous system is developed for a reason, and they call it fight or flight or rest and digest. So what needs to happen when we sit down to eat? We need to come out of fight or flight. We need to take a minute to go and allow your body to actually absorb what you're about to take in. So your body's evolved to make that part of it a necessity. That 5-minute prayer is necessary for your body to actually go now down into that parasympathetic.
You're thinking
place.
Of the physiology, absolutely. Oh, but
it's an evolution, right? Like, the autonomic nervous system has evolved for a reason. We just put labels on things. Mm-hmm. So like, I got to slow down before I eat this.
People don't realize that part of the brain, that autonomics part of the brain, developed before the part of the brain that makes us human, the part of the brain that gives us, where consciousness arises from, or some people will debate it comes from. But anyway, the part of the brain that makes you a modern human developed much later. And so the primitive part is it's reactionary. It is animal. It is instinct. It's fast. It's now. And so you literally have to think about it to disengage it. It cannot be an automatic process that disengages. So I can't just go into being in a parasympathetic state unless I go to sleep, right?
Right.
I have to consciously use the part of my brain that, you know, is saying, take a deep breath. Like another one for me was not drinking water when I eat. I used to drink water when I eat because I used to slam my food in between clients. So I chew, 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 swallow. Like I was taking a supplement, right? Now I have no water with me. I just eat my food, and now I have to chew a lot more and think about it. And my digestion has improved tremendously from such a stupid, small, you know, little thing.
Right. Well, think of the other time of the day when we pray, right? Right before bed. So what do we try to do? Take our body out of fight or flight. Come into.
Wow. I didn't even realize that. Holy shit.
Yeah. It's so simple. Like we've been doing it for thousands of years. Like take yourself out of this fight or flight. Spend 5 minutes being grateful to the world, being grateful to the energy, being grateful to God, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, hey, now my body's prepared for food or it's prepared for sleep. It's so simple, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been doing it for millions of years, but yeah, we get out of those practices because we're so busy. I'd rather play Xbox before bed or something.
Something that'll wire the phone or look at my emails so I cannot sleep.
Right. That's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's funny you said that because this brings me to just a little segue. You know, we're talking about the part of the brain that makes us human. It's the part of the brain that can choose because the animal side of us doesn't. And the difference between humans and animals is that animals act. Humans know they have a choice and they choose. So we can choose. Like, for example, are you a good person if you do good things because you don't know any better? Not really. A good person is somebody that chooses to do the right thing even though they can do the wrong thing. Another side to that is, are you a good person if you're so scared of doing the wrong things that you do the right things? In other words, I don't steal because I don't want to go to jail.
Fear of God.
Versus, I don't steal because it's the wrong thing to do. Very, very different. And it's all about having that choice. And it brings me to this particular question. And we're talking about spiritual growth. And I know you've been going, you know, this is a big part of your current evolution. And I hear a lot of people talking about, and you said something out there that I thought was fascinating and I really agree with. You hear a lot of people talk about transcending the ego and dissolving the ego, in which case
they're feeding
you're becoming an animal. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're becoming an animal. No choice. I just act. You said something out there was you didn't say dissolve the ego. You said understanding the ego and learning how to work with it or something along those lines. Yeah. So what did you mean by that?
Well, like you said, you're not going to lose your ego. You know, we're talking about transcending the ego or leaving the ego, but you're not. It's there. It's who you are. You are. The self-protective mechanism that is the ego is always going to be there. You're always going to be the most important thing in your life. But I think the reality is just making it your friend. And, you know, what my mentor says, ride your ego. He says, like, use it when you need it and, you know, try not to let it guide your decisions and guide your life.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a tight walk.
That's
right?
A good one. Yeah, no, man. That's what do they call it? The road less traveled or the straight and narrow. What does your ego love and what does your ego hate? Like if I were to poke at your ego right now, like what could I say right now that would just make your ego try to rise up and
trigger it?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Super introspective right there, huh? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still have an egocentric attachment to the way I look. Obviously, after 20 years, and I honestly don't know which direction to go with the way that I look. It's kind of an interesting thing, right? Because like I still am the head of a substantial fitness brand,
sure.
And I still want to be fit. I still want to look great. I still want to be muscular because I love it, right? I've always loved it. But I'm trying to find the deeper purpose in that rather than, so now for me, the deeper purpose is, well, I want to be strong because I want to be able to do cool stuff. So I'm looking at it from perspective of performance throughout now rather than aesthetic.
Well, the answer lies within why you love it so much.
Yeah. Why do I love the physique?
Right.
Well, because it made me who I am, man.
You know, bro, you're preaching the choir, talking to this. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But I mean, that if you're seeking the answer of why that potentially could be still a soft spot for the ego is because the answer is you just gave it. It's because I love it. Well, right. What is it about it that I love it so much to the point that it could still trigger a...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that it would make me insecure. Like, I don't know, man. I just realized...
Like if I said to you, like, man, you look like shit, would that bother you?
Yeah, I think so.
It would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. But I'm still, man, 20 years of unconscious.
You don't, by the
program.
Way, you look good.
I know. What a dick, Sal. Yeah.
I'm being honest. You look good.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. 20 years of unconscious programming to be the biggest human being on the planet and doing everything in my life to lead toward that one goal. and now try to unwind all that unconscious.
Good point.
Yeah, it's a lot, man.
Yeah,
it's a lot. So you know, especially
well, your perspective's eating. Fucked up. You, yeah. I mean, because let's be honest, you could not train for the next year and you still actually look amazing.
Thank you.
So think about that. But I know in your head, it doesn't translate the same because you've been somewhere that most people will never go.
I had that conversation yesterday. Was, you know, people are like, well, what are you training for now? Like, they're like, well, we only get in shape to do a photo shoot. I'm like, dude, the last thing I got in shape for was the Mr. Olympia contest. Like, do you think I'm inspired to go like look good on the beach or take a picture? Like, that's not going to get me off my ass. It needs to come from inside. So I'm looking deeper, like, well, why do I need to go get in shape? Why do I need to get, you know, is there a reason for me to get, like, rather than some external, like, oh, I'm going to feel good about myself. Like, I don't know. Like,
Are you looking at metrics now then? If you mention performance, is there anything pulling you in that direction?
Yes and no. I want to do some endurance stuff. I want to challenge, you know, I can't, therefore I must. I want to challenge my mind because I see the value in endurance sports. I see the value of saying, I can't do a marathon. Oh, let's find out how to do that. But time-wise right now doesn't fit in my life.
You'd start a fire with your thighs, man, if you ran that far. Yeah.
I would argue.
Team Ben, Clydesdale. Let's do this. Yeah.
I would argue that you're actually in the best shape of your life.
Oh, sure.
When you think mentally.
Health-wise?
Yeah, physically, so here's spiritually, everything else like that?
Here's a metric for you. When I retired from bodybuilding 18 months ago, I got my telomere test done. I had the telomeres of a 51-year-old.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Now I've got the telomeres of a 39-year-old. So it's in 18 months, you can make a substantial change.
How do you get those tested, by the way? The blood test?
No, saliva.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's pretty
definitely
cool.
Get it done. So, yeah, I mean, am I in the best shape of my life? Yeah. I've like literally reversed 12 years off my life. Just fasting, sleeping. Dude, I never slept as a bodybuilder, right? Like I cut my teeth on being the guy like, fuck you, I can do it. Like at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to squat 600 pounds. Let's go. Yeah. You know, if I can't, I must. And so telomeres, like, you know, am I in the best shape of my life physically? I don't care. Like what I look like, it doesn't matter. Like I'm, you know, I can do cool stuff. My endurance is great. I can run with my kids. And I'm 12 years younger than, I'm still not at my age yet, but I'm 12 years younger than I was 18 months ago. So that's a good start.
That's awesome. Yeah. I went through a bit of that process of, you know, I worked out for aesthetic. Then I was forced to work out for health because my gut just rebelled on me and I lost 15 pounds and couldn't hold anything down. I thought I had Crohn's disease. And I was forced to make that decision to train for health. And eat for health rather than
tell me about that, man. I'm very curious about that because people live, the term that is used is dread. And people have this constant underlying dread that they mask with food and with, you know,
totally
being mindless. Is that what you feel like that was?
So
were you fearing something?
Well, 100%. I mean, I had identified with being a big, strong guy, you know, work in fitness. This is what I love to do. And here I am now, and I thought I ate healthy. You know, I was eating chicken breast and oatmeal and whole grain and this and that and the other. And here I am now. I'm losing 15 pounds of muscle, look like shit. I'm pale, don't have the energy. And now who am I?
Pale what?
Yeah.
this is pale.
Yeah. What are you talking about? Pale for me. Yeah. Right. And it was like, you know, who am I? Like, what am I? I've identified so strongly with this. It's being taken away from me. It was very depressing, very, very difficult. Luckily, I was surrounded by...
But you're talking about after this had started.
Yeah.
I'm talking about what caused it.
I treated my body terribly. Absolutely terribly. Force fed myself. I took crazy amounts of supplements.
Yeah, but people do that for a long time to a much greater extent than you were. Do you think that's what it was?
I think that was a big part of my, I mean, since I was 14. I mean, keep in mind, you know, I was a 15-year-old who would take a can of tuna fish, a chicken breast, raw eggs, milk, and I'd blend them together and drink them.
Who are you talking to, man?
He's like, what are you talking about? It's breakfast every morning.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I mean, I abused it, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, quote unquote. Looking back, I thought I was doing the right thing, and as I'm sure millions of people are.
Well, so if I unpack and I go deeper, so from a I can look at it both from a physiological standpoint and from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, look at the psychology.
Right. So physiologically, it was very clear to me. You know, as a kid, I was on antibiotics a lot. Yeah. So that fucked up my microbiome. I overtrained like crazy since the age of 14, force fed myself, took lots of crazy ass supplements and designer steroids and did all these different things that were terrible for my body. My body rebelled from those physiological or physical things. But then at the same time, I was in a marriage that was completely disconnected.
There you go.
True. I was completely disconnected. You know, both me and my wife were not, I mean, we were partners in the sense that like roommates are. I mean, that's pretty much it. I did everything I thought I was supposed to do. So, you know, I grew up in a very conservative, tight Italian family, and I married another conservative Italian woman, and we did everything we were supposed to. And I bought a house at a very young age, and I was an entrepreneur at 22 years old. And it was, and I was miserable. I was so miserable, but I buried myself in being in the things that I had control over, at least the things that I had good control over, which was my work and my workouts. And that was pretty much it. And so when you combine and add all of that up together, the terrible sleep habits and diet and supplements and all that shit to drive this fucking body, and you combine it with this complete disconnect in my personal life, and that kind of a disconnect, you know, when you live a lie, and this, here's something that's interesting that I'm really, really diving into now. I'm somebody that values integrity tremendously. Tremendously. It's like my ultimate thing. I want to be around honest people, and I want to be very honest. And I feel like if you live that way, every time you make a decision, if you make that decision based on integrity, the odds that it'll turn out better for you are much higher 1,000% than not. But what I'm also understanding is when you lie about small things, that everything starts to become a big lie.
To yourself or to others?
Everything. Both. Everything. Both. Everything. So, you know, think about it when you're a kid. When you're a little kid and you tell your friend like, oh, yeah, I got, you know, I'm a black belt karate. Or yeah. I have. And then they come to your house and like, hey, what about this? And then you create another lie. It's kind of like that.
And you get your ass kicked.
Yeah. Not as specific. Not as specific, but it's very much like, I thought you knew karate, you know? But that's what ends up happening. So I'm living this lie of, I'm in this relationship that I'm on the outside. We look like the perfect family. Like, you know, good looking wife and my kids and I got this house.
Kids.
Everything's, what it's supposed to be. But it was a total lie. And part of that was lying to myself, who I am, what do I truly value, you know? People who know me will, if you ask people to what is Sal like? Like, tell me about Sal or whatever. A lot of people will say that, oh, he's very much a thinker, you know, intellectual. He likes to do those kinds of things. The funny thing is, because I identified so strongly with a lie, which was I am this big, strong, physical person, I almost completely, I mean, it's a part of me because it's a part of who I am, but I completely disregarded it. In fact, I didn't even feed it. And I rediscovered it later on. And the way I rediscovered it was, you know, I trained really, really smart, brilliant clients. And I had some clients that were, this is an interesting story. I had some clients that were anesthesiologists, surgeons, and psychiatrists, and they were all friends. And there was about seven of them, and they were clients of mine. We were working out, and they go, hey, man, we're going to go on this, we go on this annual trip, and we go on the Delta on this houseboat, and we all have a great time, and we want you to come. And I looked up to these guys. Like, they were super successful, super smart, like very, very confident. I'm like, holy shit. So I go out there with them and we're sitting there talking and everybody's, you know, we're having a great time. And they're like, man, you know, one of them stops and goes, fuck, Sal, you're like a really smart dude. And I'm coming from this guy who is a brilliant, brilliant psychiatrist. I was like, you're just saying that to be nice. Like, there's no way. And then everybody starts telling me. And they start telling me why and how. And of course, I got the psychiatrist over there, and he's breaking me down. And it was a crazy pivotal moment. And that, along with my body rebelling with me, along with me still being a growth-oriented person, and as I'm growing, it's completely conflicting with this false person that I was, this false ego that I had. And at some point, when you grow enough, your ego starts to rise up to fight it. At some point, you're going to have a clash, and something's going to win. And I started Mind Pump. I met these guys. I sold my wellness or fitness facility and got a divorce. And this all happened within the course of a year. And it was a very painful, crazy transformation. But I'll tell you what. I'm also a big fan of economics. And in the free market, when you skew the market signals hard enough, you're going to get a market correction at some point. It's just the longer you kick the harder you kick the can down the road, the correction's going to be much, much, much bigger. And that's what fucking happened to me. Is I had a market correction. The stock market crashed. Everybody lost their job.
Always economics.
And it was a tough transition. But now
what was the catalyst for you, man?
What was the catalyst for all of that?
Well, for getting out. Because there's a million men out there right now living that life.
You know, a few things, actually. So my wife at the time, I was very close with her family, love her family. And I care about her too. She's a great person, but loved her family. And in her family, good people, love her brother. He's like my younger brother and everybody. But her mom was a very special individual. Somebody that you'll meet maybe once in your life. Truly a wonderful, wonderful, loving, altruistic in the truest sense, human being. And she got diagnosed with terminal cancer while I was married. And this was very tough. It was very, very tough for everybody. And she trusted me very much. And, you know, doctors basically like, we can't do anything. There's nothing we can do. And she turned to me and she said, Sal, she goes, and I told her, I said, listen, anything you need, I'm going to be there and I'm going to help you with it. I'm going to go with you to doctor's appointments. And she was so grateful. And she told me, she says, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to let you tell me what to do. So she put that trust in me.
That's deep.
Fucking hard.
Yeah.
Fucking hard because she died.
Yep.
Didn't work. Now, she lived, you know, she was supposed to survive for 3 months and then die. And she made it over a year and a half. And through that period of time, you know, she ended up going on hardcore chemo, which was a huge regret of mine because that was on, you know, everybody was like, should she do it? And she looked at me to make the final decision. And out of fear, I said, let's try it. And it was bad decision. But then she tried other things. And it, of course, you know, fate had it that she didn't make it. And that was a very difficult transition. That was a very difficult period. Actually had some, and there was a lot of learning lessons. One of them was, you know, I put that on myself, and then I put on myself that she didn't make it. It was very, very difficult. And her being gone and all that pain, I started examining everything. And I think the same thing happened to my wife at the same time. And we had some really, really tough conversations.
I think there was resentment there between the two of you guys, like between you and your wife.
Oh, tremendous. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, married for 15 years together since we were 16. So you want to talk about
the resentment over the death?
No. In fact, that brought us closer because she saw how much I cared about the well-being of her mom and how much I took care of everybody because I put the whole family on my back. Everybody was a mess and I took that responsibility. And I did suffer the consequences of it physically as a result of that in the form of, like, you know, post-traumatic stress in some cases. But she appreciated me with that and so for that. And we had some tough conversations because I think when you're faced with a tremendous amount of pain and something that you can't control, you can either hide and shelter yourself and become this mean, bitter, callous person who doesn't want to ever be hurt again, or you can grow from it and understand that all life is tragic. All life has, you know, it's tough, and there's beauty to that. There's a lot of good to that as well. So I grew from it. My wife didn't at the time. She you know, went in on her own, and we had a lot of tough conversation. Her brother grew tremendously. Her brother was a bit of a selfish, you know, egocentric individual. After his mom died, became this incredible human being. I think that's one of the reasons why she had to go. I think it was to transform everybody. And so we had these tough conversations, these real conversations. And the day I made my decision to leave was my decision. It was done. Like, I'm going to leave. We both decided it. Neither one of us went back on it. Neither one of us sat down and said, you know, hey, maybe we're not doing the right thing. No, we made our decisions. 1 week after I walked out of the house, Mind Pump monetizes. 1 week after. It wasn't planned. It's just we all decide, hey, I think it's time to start selling programs. Fucking Mind Pump starts blowing up. I meet a young lady shortly afterwards who, at this point, I was in no way, shape, or form did I ever wanted to meet somebody else. I was totally in the mindset of, I am focusing on my family and I'm focusing on work and myself, and that's it. And I meet this young lady that absolutely blew my mind and fell in love with her, and I'm with her, and I'm a better father now. I mean, I examined how I was as a father. I was very loving and hugging and kissing with my kids, but I wasn't very involved. Mm-hmm. Now I'm far more involved as a parent. So it was a very hard and fast transition, but very grateful for it. But I think I could have grown at a slower, easier pace had I allowed myself to do so.
Sure,
but rather than get hit with the rock in the face.
There's beauty in that, right? There's beauty in the fact that you know, there's people out there living a life and they don't realize what the other life could be, you know. And now you're living this great life, you're making an impact on people, you're making a greater impact on your kids, and you know, you couldn't see that before. because it was being blocked by your focus on perhaps that bad relationship. But so if people in that relationship there, they could see the potential of, you know, what you could be living outside of these negative relationships.
You're not doing anything when you're living a lie. You're not, because part of the reason why I did it is because I had kids.
Mm-hmm.
So
how old are your kids?
My son's 12 and my daughter's 8. And I'm like, I'm not going to get a divorce because that's not good for kids. I know the statistics on divorce with kids. I know what happens. And, you know, I'm going to do this for my kids. I'm going to stick around for my kids. But you are not doing anybody any favors and you're not benefiting anybody, especially your kids, if you are not being truthful to who you are. Now, if you're truthful and you're honest and you're you who you are and your spouse is that way and you guys work together, that's the best, right? But if you both reach a point where you're like, this, I have to be who I am, and it doesn't work and you still stick around, that is, that's not good. That's not good for your kids. It's not good for you. It's crippling. And I was going to raise two dysfunctional children if I continued down that path. As loving as I was, as much as I love my kids, as much as I thought I was sacrificing for my kids, the reality was, is I was hurting them. But the irony of that is I didn't leave to save for them either. I left for me. It was after I left that I realized, wow, I really did a good thing for my children. Because what the way I was before as a dad, I wasn't a bad dad, but you can't fake shit. I think kids can sense that stuff.
Totally,
you
know? Man.
They can
totally
sense that can. Stuff. That's really, really crazy. And, you know, we talk about kids being your ultimate teachers. You love your kids enough to face your darkest demons. That's what'll drive you. I'll tell you that much right now. That'll drive the fuck out of you.
There's an irony right there, man. So we may have talked about this in the last podcast, but I think my kids saved my life, man. Like, I was so single-mindedly focused on becoming Mr. Olympia that there was nothing that was going to detract from that ever. Women, money, like I was full on going to be Mr. Olympia. The only thing that could have stopped me was a child. One wasn't even enough. I had to have two. And then only then, after my daughter was born, did I go, God, I got to get the hell out of this. So I literally believe I would be Mr. Olympia. And then I would have shortened my life because I was at that point in my career where if I wanted to take it to the next step, I needed to go a little bit deeper, right? Like I hadn't, there was still another gear there that I hadn't really dived into as a bodybuilder. And I could have.
Do you mean that literally too, by gear too? Is that really what you're thinking? Is there a kind of a threshold where a lot of the guys?
I don't know what anybody else is doing. I know what I was willing to do, and I know I hadn't gone there yet. Like I hadn't gone anywhere near what I know what other people are doing or what I know what would take me to that next level. And I didn't because I was like, I don't need to do this anymore. Why am I doing this? I started questioning, why am I doing this? And I didn't need to do it. And it was literally like, because I had two kids that saved my life. And at the time there was a bit of resentment, unconscious resentment toward my kids for ending my career. And then I looked at it and I was like, you know, thank you. I'm so grateful for you literally saving my life, man. Like you guys, you could imagine what a professional bodybuilder. I was the most single-mindedly focused human being on the planet. Like you couldn't detract me. Like you heard the conversation I had with my wife when we first met. Like, this is what I do. If you can make it better, awesome. If not, there's the
best. Arguably the most selfish sport that exists on the planet, I believe.
Yeah, for sure.
Because of the amount of focus that it takes on the nutritional aspect along with the work, because every sport takes tons of work.
Sure.
So you could argue there's someone out there out working me out on the field or in the gym or something like that, but.
But it's 24 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah. That's always the thing is like, you know, as a fighter, if you want to go have a beer, if you want to go have some Doritos or something, go eat your, you know, we'll get back on track tomorrow. But as a bodybuilder, you can't do that stuff. And it's 24 hours a day.
Right.
Did you feel, because you said resentment, which I thought was, to be able to say that as a parent, which by the way, if you're a parent and you haven't battled with resenting your kids, you're not being fucking honest. Okay. Yeah. It's a fact. So here you are, super focused. If you get in my way, I'm going to fucking run you over. That's literally your mentality.
I resented my wife massively, as you can imagine, and my kids.
Were they planned? Yeah. Was the first pregnancy planned?
No, man. We weren't even in the same state. Like,
holy shit. So here you are, super focused. She's like, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
I'm pregnant.
Wow.
How did you handle that shit?
All right, I'm moving.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, we were basically broken up.
Holy Toledo.
Like, yeah, so because I was like, yeah, no, I got to get focused, right? I got the Olympia coming up.
Holy shit, wait a second, back up here. You married the woman that you broke up with but then had a kid with and you guys are still here today in a healthy relationship.
Yeah. We're still married.
That's
amazing.
Well, dude, how do we miss that? Like, in all the conversations we
exactly.
have. That's fucking that crazy. How long ago was that now?
7 years.
Oh, wow.
Coming up on 8. Yeah. Oh, no, 7 years. It was 2011. Yeah, a lot of...
That'll put you on the fast track of growth right there.
Yeah, man.
One way or another.
Yeah, you can be as committed as you want to something, but, you know, so the first one was like, oh, it's a son, you know, it's a huge curveball, but I can deal with this, right? I can keep going.
I can still hit this one.
Did you immediately just think, wow, okay, what happened in your childhood and everything? Like, you just wanted to be, like, the best father immediately.
There was no way that I wasn't going to be a great dad, right? Yeah. So my first inclination, to be honest, was like, fuck this girl. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Mm. And that lasted about 3 seconds. And I was like, no, like, cause the first are like she did it on purpose kind of thing, right? She's trying to trap me. Your first thought, right?
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm a successful guy. I'm doing well. I'm, you know, on this path, and this chick is trying to trap me down. And then I was like, well, regardless what her motivation was, this is still my responsibility. So I moved. You know, started raising a son, and then we went on another vacation after the Mr. Olympia that year, and my daughter was conceived. So at that point, I knew that bodybuilding was no longer in the cards for me. Because with the son, man, I felt like I could keep going. But once I had a daughter, I couldn't be the same human being in the gym. You can't go home and be this wonderful, loving, caring dad with this angel of a human being, and go to the gym and be a focused, crazed killer machine.
Yeah,
it's very hard, very, very hard. So I just was like, well, I couldn't find that anger anymore, man. I couldn't find that like pissed off button anymore, right like, yeah. which I used to cut my teeth on that. Like, I used to be really good at that. Like, if you come near me, I'm gonna crush you. I couldn't do that anymore.
How much does your wife feed your flame, and like, are there certain things that she really brings to the table that have definitely made you the man you are today?
My wife is my, behind my kids, she's my greatest teacher. And I think that's because I brought her into my life because I had a lot to learn. I'm not quite sure exactly what that looks like yet, but I know it's teaching me patience. It's teaching me to be a better communicator.
Are you receptive when she calls you on your bullshit?
Yeah. Yes, I am. So my wife is a terrible communicator. Mm. So I don't only need to be a better communicator for me, but I need to be a better communicator for her, to the point that I need to articulate myself in such a calm way that she understands and allows her to open up to me. So it's an interesting dynamic. But yeah, like, there's a lot to be learned there for me, man. You know, and at first there was a lot of finger pointing, right? It was a lot of, you know, she's this and she's that. And then you realize, like, okay, well, what do I need to learn in this? So we're both going through a lot of learning opportunities.
That's tough. I rely heavily on my partner to be that other great source of communication, because I know I have my own tendencies to...
I have people in my life who are not my wife who call me on my bullshit. Mm. Thank goodness.
Right. I'd call you on your bullshit. You know, we're friends like that.
Yeah, man.
Adam loves doing that, by the way.
I actually like to speak about that. So there may be some people out there. So as a bodybuilder, man, I live the most sheltered life, to the point that... I almost felt like I was recluse, and I went out and I was like, I fucking hate this. I hate the way that I have no one to share these conversations with. So I literally went out and hired somebody, a life coach, just talk to once a week. I was like, hey man, you know what? I don't have a lot of good people in my life right now. I need to talk to you once a week. I'm going to pay you because I know your time's valuable. He's a friend of mine. So I'm going to pay you because I know your time's valuable. And I want to, you know, I want to show you that I value your time, and I want your attention. I don't want to make this a chore for you. So for anybody out there who's living that life, who's like, I don't have anybody, that may be like, honestly, that was like the last straw for me, man. I had nobody in my life. It was 2012. My son was just born. I didn't have anybody to talk to. My wife wasn't that person for me at the time. And, you need somebody, man. Like, getting, it's so important to, you know, the five people rule, right? The five people you surround yourself with. And if it's like diapers and, you know, preschool moms, that may not be the best opportunity for growth. So I literally went out and hired, you know, at the time, the greatest man I knew. And I said, hey man, what's it going to cost me to talk to you every Thursday? So we've been doing it since, man, 6 years, every week, talk to him on Thursdays. And for anyone out there who's, like I say, who's living that life of, man, I don't really have anybody to help me grow, to challenge me, to, you know, call bullshit on my words. This guy was the king of calling bullshit on my words. Mm. Still is. The words you choose, you know, that's where we start usually, the words you choose, the in your unconscious and in your verbal exchanges. Say so much about what's going on in your unconscious. Right?
How does that quote go? Be careful of your thoughts to become your words. Be careful of your words to become your actions. Be careful of your actions to become your character.
Yep. That's true, man. And like the way you choose words, you know, if I ask you a question about your wife or your girlfriend and, you know, I have to versus I get to, or I have to versus I want to. And like looking at how you choose says so much about what's actually happening. Mm. So he's that guy. He's like, so talk to me. And he just like, you hear what you said there? I'm like, fuck.
So unpack just, that.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it, right? It's like having that skill goes so far in calling you on your BS. And that's important, man. If you want to grow, you got to be ready to get uncomfortable and trust somebody to call you on your BS. You know, oh, I have to do this, or she does this and she does that. I'm like, whoa, hold up. That's your perspective, right? Your perception. So.
Right.
Yeah, growth doesn't come from being comfortable, because otherwise there's no reason to grow. It only comes from being uncomfortable, and because that's how it happens. What makes you most uncomfortable now?
Not being a good dad. Mm. Still. So
isn't that an interesting one?
That's Sal's insecurity.
Oh, I mean, I'll tell you what. I think most parents. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Like.
That's a big one for you, and I'll tell you why it's a big one for you.
Because
you're an incredible dad, and I have a better perspective for you as a guy who's seen thousands of other dads and then see the way you are with your kids, and you're an incredible father. But yet, if I ever see you get triggered, frustrated with anything, it's if it's taking away from you potentially being a good dad.
Oh, yeah.
Right, or somebody who's influencing your kids in a negative way.
Right.
And that's the life that I'm living now, man. It's like, I don't, like, that's why I say I'm protecting my kids, quote unquote. It's like, I just want them to be great humans, man. And I don't want somebody to fuck up their unconscious because I'm being so conscious of not. Like, I'm like letting them be these free spirits and letting them do whatever they want to do. Letting them be, you know, be the kids that are loud, be the kids that are running, be the kids that, like, I'm like, go, be free. And then you have some other a-hole that's, you know, inflicting their unconscious beliefs on my kids. And that pisses me off.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I'm doing a lot of reading right now on that. And two things. One was the first one that I said, which was don't try to protect your kids. Try to make them strong. Mm-hmm. Now what that means is...
Punch them in the nose.
Exactly. No. It means, you know, sometimes you are the one that's hugging them and coddling them. And sometimes you're challenging them because that's what makes them strong. Yeah. And the other one, which was fucking mind-blowing for me, was never do for your kids what they can do for themselves.
Yep.
And I read that and I was like, holy shit, that makes a lot of sense. Like how much, like you are robbing every time you do something for them that they can do, you're robbing them of the opportunity
to grow.
Not just grow, but be confident in their independence as being human
beings. What's great is when like my youngest will catch me on that and it'll be something where,
Dad, I can do that.
Yeah, I can do this, Dad. Watch me do this. And he's literally trying to show me and prove to me. And meanwhile, I'm trying to rush everything and get everything going where, you know, he's literally trying to show me these new skills that he's acquired. And yeah, it's a challenge, man, because you want to be a part of the process with them, but you have to let them learn.
So I'll say that one more time.
Which one?
But the kids.
Never do for your kids what they can do for themselves. That's it.
I got you on video.
You show that to wifey?
That was a moment in time.
You're going on social media.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, so I was raised a bit sheltered. I said earlier, my mom did everything for me. And she's like that with all her kids. Very loving, by the way. It's not coming from you know, it's all because she's a loving, good person. And man, I tell you what, I didn't know how to do a damn thing. I mean, I moved out and, you know, luckily I'm an ambitious fucker. So I went out at 20 years old 21 years old, I went and bought a gym and I moved out and didn't know how to operate anything in the house. I put liquid soap in the dishwasher. Because I looked at the thing and I'm like, oh, okay. And I put some Dawn in there and I turn it on and I go sit down, watch TV. And next thing you know, it's a fucking bath. Mexican foam party in my house, you know? I'm like, oh, shit. Like,
I feel like we've all done that,
though. Dude, I had to learn how to wash clothes for my neighbor.
See,
and
I
then
didn't do that.
It was just a bunch of...
I did when I was a kid,
I was forced to do all that shit when I was 7, 8 years old.
And you're very self-reliant as a result.
Yeah, right. I definitely, I did all that. I learned all those mistakes early on in life. So I crack up when I see that shit.
Yeah, no, you're just, I think you're just... Because life is hard. It's hard for everybody. It's tragic. Shit happens. And if I can prepare my kids to make them strong, resilient, hardworking, and to be honest, then their odds of being, you know, finding peace, because people always say, find your happiness. No, happiness is it's an emotion. Like, you know, you can't be happy all the time. That's bullshit. But you can find peace. You know, peace is being okay with the challenges.
Joyful. Of life. I call it joy, man. It's like, you know,
absolutely.
Having that inner feeling of like,
that's it. Yeah, that's joy, it. Peace, and if I can raise my kids like that, then I know that.
You also teach them how to win and be successful really well too, that I think is different than a lot of people. I think a lot of people that are proud of their kids because they accomplished something get so caught up in the moment and celebrate the moment, where you see that as a teaching opportunity. And I think that that's missed by a lot of parents too. Yeah. So I think that advice is.
Oh, absolutely. So my son is exceptional at academics. Very, very, very bright kid. He's in seventh grade. When they test him, his reading comprehension is college level. In math, he's the highest level he could possibly be in. And the kid finishes, I mean, he does his tests, you know, in 10 minutes, and it's just not a problem. So when I talk to him about his academics, I never tell him how smart he is. I never say to him, like, you're the smart. I always tell him, like, hey, look, I can tell you worked hard at this. Or
you doing your best.
Yeah. Or, you know, son, I can see that math comes easy to you.
Yeah.
And I want him to think about that. Like, what do you mean come easy to me? Like, I want him to know that, like, oh, I should probably challenge myself. And I told him that. I said, you know, when we put you in, and when you go to high school, because we're looking at high schools right now, I said, I told him, because he said, I'm going to get straight A's. I said, that's great. I said, but I'll be honest with you. I said, if I saw you in a class that challenged the heck out of you and you got a B, I'd be more proud than if you got an A in an easy class. And I left it at that, because I want him to embrace the challenge. And so when he succeeds at something, I praise his work ethic, or I talk about humility. Like, you know, if you're okay, fine, you're the smartest one in class with this particular test, or you do the best with the test, help other people and don't brag about it and have humility. And then on the flip side, in athletics, he's not the best at all. He takes after his father. And so there's a lot of teaching lessons there too about being the hard, about practicing, working hard, not making excuses because, oh, I missed that shot, but it's because this, you know, the floor in this basketball court's really slippery. No, you missed that shot because you need to practice more. You're not as good as you could be. And we talk about that. And also about playing on a team. You know, we had an experience where he was playing on a team, and there's a couple times where he's really made me so proud. They were in a tournament, and they were playing in a tournament, and they were doing very well. They got second place. And on the way home, he goes and was quiet, you know, and he goes, yeah, he goes, the coach didn't have me play that much in that game. And I didn't say anything. I said, yeah, I saw that. And he goes, it's because I'm not one of the better people on the team. And the score was really close and he wanted to keep the better people on the team. And I said, how does that make you feel? I want to see what his reaction was. He goes, well, I think he made the right decision because at that moment we wanted to win as a team. And I said, you know what? I said, I agree with you. And I said, and also understand that your role on that team sometimes, many times, doesn't mean that you're the top scorer or the best player. Sometimes it means you're supporting the players from the bench, or you're showing them that you're trying hard, and it makes them try even harder. And so it was just a great, you know, opportunity. Yeah. And my daughter does the same thing with me. She'll, you know, my daughter will, well, she's got a temper, and she'll, you know, scream or yell or hit her brother. And so I've learned to, when she does something, first off, when she does something like that, when she displays violence, I stop it immediately because that's unacceptable. But then I tell her, listen, if there's something that you want to communicate, you have to communicate it in a way that people want to listen to you. If you yell or you scream or you throw something, nobody's going to want to listen to you. And then you're going to be all alone screaming and angry and whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you're ready to communicate to me, you can come talk to me. But for now, because you're being loud and whatever, you're not going to be with the rest of the family because nobody wants to be around that. So you go over there. And so now she's learned to use her words. So she'll get angry and they'll say, use your words. And then she'll calm down and she'll tell me, I don't like it when you blah, 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 blah. And so these are the lessons that I really live for as a parent. It's funny because I'm so much better now, probably because of the insecurity of, you know, getting divorced and wanting to be a better parent. So yeah. there's a good side to that as well.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
I always, everything comes back to what's the message you're trying to get across with kids, right? Like, dude, I just want them to know that I love them. You know, like if everything you say comes from that perspective, nothing like that. Nothing they do will ever be wrong, or like you'll always be from, I'm trying to teach you rather than reprimanding you. And mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of parents do wrong is, and I learned that from Stephen Covey is, you know, if your kids are doing something bad, most people are going, well, don't do that or stop doing that. I'm like, let them know that you love them and then everything else will be okay.
Dude, it's amazing
how much of that transcends into business.
Oh, it's the same.
And leadership.
It's the same.
When you talk about trying to motivate a staff of people and recognizing some of them are going to scream and lash out and, others are going to be quiet and not say anything, but then inside be angry. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same thing as learning how to get them to all communicate.
It's so funny. One of the biggest fears that dads have, the macho fear, right? That their daughter is going to, you know, sleep around with a bunch of dirt bags and super prim. You know, this is like a male fear we have of our kids, especially our daughters, right?
She knew porn.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, she's gonna go on a motorcycle with some dude and, you know, whatever.
But it's always a motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. That's the stereotype, right?
Fuck.
But the irony of that is, if you don't want your daughter to seek out that kind of attention and to be promiscuous in ways that are unhealthy for her and all that stuff, all you got to do is show her that, or just have her be super secure with her dad. Like, if she's secure as fuck with her dad, like, she knows you love her and you're there and you're firm and you're not a pushover or whatever, she's not going to go seeking it out with other people. And that's the whole irony of it all, is like, you try and teach something. It's funny. I'm reading about you know, a lot about raising children recently. And as a parent, you tend to think about all these big moments where you can really impact, like, oh, here's a big moment or something that's going to happen. Right. But
doesn't matter.
No, the author was talking about how he goes, listen, think about all the times you wake your kids up and you know, get them ready for school. It takes 30 minutes of your day. You get them ready. You make them breakfast. You scoot them out the door to school. He goes, now add that up over the course of their life. That's like, you know, 5 years of interaction with you just getting up in the morning for school. Those are the moments that have the big impacts on your kids. It's not that once in a great while you throw a big birthday party and you show your kid how much you love them. It's all those little things that you do every single day.
Yes, sir.
Blew my fucking mind. Mm-hmm. Changed everything.
Yep.
Changed everything. So.
Yeah, man. It's every minute. And I took my son every weekend to, we are like a daddy Sunday, right? We take him out to the national park. And as long as I have great connected time with him once a week, that's all he needs, man. Like, we have such a great relationship, such a great connection. I still spend time with him during the week, but I want to make sure we have that special time where we just connect. My daughter's still too young to do that, but eventually I'll just do one day with each of them. And then, because we get so caught up with like trying to spend all the time, just give them some good time.
That's right. How old's your boy?
My son's six.
And 6 years old. Four, yeah. How are you? Well, he's young, but do you feel comfortable being affectionate with your boy as he gets older?
For sure, man.
Okay. Even if he's as a young man, you're not going to have a problem.
Man, every Saturday morning we wake up and I put on the music and we dance and we just dance ridiculously. Right. And I just show them nothing but love. And because I didn't get it. And maybe I'm going,
that's a hard cycle to break, dude.
I know it is, man. But that's all it is like fun, having fun, letting them know it's okay to be goofy. Let them know it's okay to be silly, to dance, to sing, even though you don't feel like you have a great voice, or like just sing and dance and let out that inner joy, because we all need it. We all need to let that go because we're afraid of it. So that little bit of time and connecting goes a long way, man.
Fuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, man, another great conversation with you, brother.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah, yeah, you make the trip worth it. For sure.
Yeah.
You know, we had to fly. Our flight got delayed. We ended up
little red eye.
Yeah. We had no sleep for like 2 days in a row. So, yeah.
Feel better today, though.
We're feeling good now.
Yeah. At least you're here, right? And it gets relaxed.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Good. Great.
Anyway, appreciate you talking with us.
Thank you, I think
we did a long podcast. So maybe we can do something with this on both shows.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, man.
I think so.
Thanks, boys.
Right on.